Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Can you believe it's been 30 years since that call? One of the most infamous moments in sports history. The biggest moment in the modern history of Bay Area sports, that's for sure. The man who called it, legendary Hall of Fame broadcaster Al Michaels on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Al, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you, sir?
I'm great. You know, you say frightening. I'm not sure whether it was more frightening to go through it or to think that it's been 30 years. That's really scary.
It really is. The most vivid memory you have of that day is what? What wafts through your mind more than anything else?
Well, I think about how beautiful that day was because we were in the city and our crew had gone out to lunch. I think we went to Trader Vic's, and we were walking out of there and, you know, getting ready to leave for Candlestick at about 1:30 that afternoon and thinking about just a great day to be alive. I mean, it was the perfect Bay Area day, ice blue sky, light breeze, temperature was, you know, probably in the low 70s. Couldn't have been better. And to think about, hey, we're doing the World Series tonight. Life doesn't get a lot better than at moments like that. And then, of course, to go out there and then to live through it. And what I'll always recall is obviously we're on the air and working in a pretty good state of concentration because at the top of the show, we have a lot of moving parts. I've got to come on the air and set the scene and then bring in Tim McCarver and bring in Jim Palmer. And we had rehearsed it, and I was bringing in McCarver, and McCarver was narrating his piece, describing a play that had taken place in Oakland on Sunday night. And that's when the first thing I remember is that it felt to me as if, you know, we're sitting in the mezzanine at Candlestick Park, the upper deck's right above us, and I'm thinking that a bunch of kids are pounding bats on the ground just above the broadcast booth. I mean, that was like a flash thought. Like, that was the sound I remember hearing, like, bump, 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 bump. And, you know, as we all know, living through earthquakes, you hear it before you feel it. And then we started to move, and that's when I knew it was and what it was. And the words I said at that point were, I'll tell you what, we're having an earthquake. And if you look at the tape, it's one of the few times that you'll hear a Q without the U in earthquake, because that's exactly when I got cut off. And then we were off the air for a number of minutes after that.
Who was most freaked out up there? Because you'd been through earthquakes before, because you lived here for a bunch of years. Was it you? Was it McCarver? Or was it Palmer?
You know, it's interesting, Ray, that McCarver to this day insists that I grabbed him, you know, around the thigh. I'm not that kind of a guy to begin with, saying. And I swear I still have the indentation from McCarver grabbing me around the left thigh, because I think Timmy was, we were all shaken, obviously, to a certain extent, because as we know, having lived through these things, it starts and you don't know when it's going to stop, and you don't know if the intensity gets less or more. So you're wondering, you know, is how much longer, will it get stronger? So we have all of that going through our minds, in addition to, you know, trying to do a scene set on national television before, you know, 20 million viewers or whatever we had at that particular time. But I think, you know, Tim was a little freaked out by it. Jim, I think, was a little freaked out by it. We didn't get a chance to really talk about it until later. But it's one of those things where, you know, if you escape like a tree falling down, you know, by 30 seconds, it would have killed you. I think after the fact is when you really began to gulp and when you thought about, hey, what might have happened had it been longer and stronger.
So from the moment they told you, we're off the air, what did you do to try to figure out what was coming? Because you're looking out, none of the light towers are on. People are talking about the the outfield looks like the open sea. When did you deduce that you weren't doing a game that night and maybe not for a while?
Well, it's so funny because you think back 30 years and how primitive it was. No social media. Cable television existed, but not nearly in the form that we know it now. No internet. None of that. No Twitter. If this happened today, you'd have a tweet storm within 5 seconds. In those years, as we know, you didn't know any. You didn't know anything. And I recall that I knew we were off the air. You might remember, Ray, that within, I think, 15 or 20 minutes, when nobody's quite sure what's going on, and the players and their families are out in the middle of the field, there was a chant that went up, and the chant was, play ball, play ball. So nobody really understood the magnitude of what had taken place. And it wasn't until later on. Now, for me, I knew we were off the air, and I knew that I had no communication. And fortunately, you know, at 5:04 on October the 17th, there's still plenty of light. So even though the lights are out, there's still enough sunlight. You didn't feel like you were, you know, it wasn't 10 o'clock at night where it would have been really frightening with no light. So you could still see everything. And I know that I couldn't communicate with the truck. I knew we were off the air. And I picked up, there was a phone. In the booth, and I picked it up, and it did have a dial tone. And now I'm thinking, who am I going to call? This is 30 years ago. So one of my great pals, who I'd started with at ABC in the mid-70s, was the guy by the name of Bob Iger, who's done fairly well for himself.
Heard of him. So yeah, not bad.
Bob hasn't done too badly, but Bob was in sports for a lot of years. Had taken over entertainment at ABC. And so I called Bob's office, figuring I need somebody at ABC. And I knew, you know, I knew Bob's number off the top of my head, and Bob picked up, and he was the one who had told me that it was centered some, you know, 80 to 90 miles away from Candlestick, and the magnitude, I believe he told me he was hearing, it was like a 7.1, 7.2 magnitude. So that's when I knew, wow, I mean, that really must have been something if it's that far away. And that is how I got the information. The first time I got information about the magnitude of it, the location of it, was from Bob Iger on a landline phone. It was the only thing that was working in the booth at that time. And then what they did with me is they told me to come down to the truck where it was easier for me to be set up, and they could put me on the air, and then I was in the truck and outside the truck, and we set up something in our compound, and I remember bringing Faye Vincent in, and once we got back on the air, I interviewed Faye Vincent. I interviewed some other people who were there and germane to the situation, and we did that for hours upon hours.
Al Michaels here on 95.7 The Game. As someone who was watching at home as a 14-year-old kid, I remember how clear it was that you took off your I'm sports broadcasting hat and put on your I have a bigger news story to cover hat. I remember being blown away that you knew that section of the bridge was called a cantilever. How valuable was it that you lived out here for that moment? It really feels like that moment picked you to be there as much as any sports moment picked you to be anywhere.
Well, there's no question that having lived in the area and knowing the area and being able to do things like I knew, you know, the Marina District, I knew the fire. I think I even had Cervantes Street in there. You say they'd been there, and we used to, I know Art Spander. The Spanders and the Michaels would have a lot of dinners in that Marina District at certain restaurants. So I knew the streets, so I couldn't have done that without having lived there. But I will tell you that I've always been a map and an atlas freak, and I've always loved looking at maps and scouring over atlases or through atlases. And I love those, the above books, you know, the above San Francisco, above London, above New York, above Paris. I have all of them. And so I think I could have done this in a lot of major cities, not to the extent that I did it in San Francisco, but the fact that I loved aerial photography, and we had the blimp. And the blimp was huge for us that night. And the only thing that confused me a little bit, I knew the fire in the marina. We had the cantilever section of the Bay Bridge. There was a report that came to us that the Golden Gate Bridge had collapsed, And I'm hearing this from somebody in the truck. They're hearing it. What are we talking about? And I got the man who coordinated the blimp coverage to, swing over, and I see traffic going across the Golden Gate Bridge. So that I knew that was bogus. And then when they went over and they showed us Oakland, the only thing I couldn't wrap my brain around, I knew that the freeway was double-decked, but I couldn't exactly remember where the exact location of that was. And so when I first looked at that, I thought it was the freeway had buckled, not knowing until later, obviously, that what you had was the collapse of the upper deck of the freeway onto the lower deck in Oakland, and that's where, obviously, many of the deaths took place. So that's the only thing. And again, when I'm covering this, I didn't go into detail about that. I just said it looks like the roadway has definitely buckled in Oakland, and you had to leave it at that until you got all of the information.
The Giants clearly never sort of got back into the series, I think, emotionally. The A's left the area for a while so that they wouldn't have to watch nonstop earthquake coverage. But when you guys came back 10 days later, were you really in the mood to do games 3 and 4? Did you have to force yourself to be enthusiastic? Or did you just try to plow your way through?
You know, Ray, I felt what was the most interesting aspect in that regard was there were a couple of writers from the East. I think Dave Anderson, who was a fantastic writer for the New York Times, wrote a couple of columns about they should cancel the World Series. And I'm thinking, why? Why? San Francisco was the equivalent in that whole area, the Bay Area, in Northern California. To me, it was the equivalent of a fighter getting knocked down. They got knocked down. They took an 8 count. They want to get back up and get back into the fight, to continue the fight. That's what fighters try to do. And I felt that was the Bay Area, as opposed to, I think, some of the writers from back East wanted to go home. For whatever reason, I think, fewer things are better than, being in San Francisco for 2 weeks. So I was very happy that the World Series resumed. And I thought it was really cool, the way they did it. They brought out a lot of first responders. And you remember it was 10 days later. It was the Friday. And I think it just gave everybody a sense of normalcy to a degree. And I felt the same way about it. I felt that we needed to come on the air and talk about how this was a region that was going to get up off the deck and get back to what life is. And of course, I don't know whether, the Giants were emotionally not as ready as the A's were. But the A's, first of all, they had a 2-0 lead to begin with. You go to game three, and then there was a brushback pitch, I think, with Canseco, maybe in the first inning, and the guys weren't going to come out of the dugout and fight. But I remember, wow, you got real baseball taking place. And the A's won, of course, game three. Game four, remember, Ray, was a rout at one point. I think it was 8-0 Oakland. But then the Giants, made it a one-run game. I'd have to look it up again. But I think late in the game it was 8-7. And then Kevin Mitchell almost did a 3-run homer, which would have given the Giants the lead. So that would have been the all-time story if the Giants could have, come back up off the deck, won game four, and somehow gone on to win the series. But I was happy that the World Series had resumed. And once you get going, once you get rolling, you're back to baseball.
Sort of following up on that, obviously you have been on the mic for some sports moments that transcend the sports world, even beyond this one. And I'm just curious, how do you manage bringing sort of the outside world into what you're doing in a broadcast? Because I imagine that there are moments, whether it's this or obviously Miracle on Ice or any of the other sort of bigger than sports moments you've been on the air for. Is that something you're conscious of, balancing the real world with the sports aspect when you're doing the call?
Well, as my career has gone on and I've gotten older and hopefully more educated through the years, yeah, I mean, I've learned a lot of its experience. I mean, Lake Placid, I was in my 30s, and I can't believe it. 30 years for the earthquake. It'll be 40 years for Lake Placid in February, which is crazy. But that was at the end of that game. That was simply a matter of my heart. My heart became my voice, And what I said at the end of the Soviet game resonated with a lot of people because it was one of the few times in history where you're doing a game and 99.99% of the audience is with you. I mean, we're all we live in this country, and maybe there were a few communists out there who weren't too happy that night, but for the most part, almost everybody in America was. So you can't do that at the end of a Super Bowl game. You can't say, do you believe in miracles? Because, you know, half the audience is going the other way. So that was different. By the time I got to San Francisco, you know, there's just an understanding of just you've got to keep everything in perspective. And everything should always be in perspective. And I remember thinking, you know, after 9/11, I'd read stories about, well, that puts everything in perspective. I'm going, really? Well, everything should always be in perspective. You don't need 9/11 to give you perspective. So even that night in San Francisco, I felt the most important thing since I was the reporter on the scene was, number one, to get the facts straight. Don't go to places you don't know anything about or enough about. Make sure what you know is accurate and correct. And not that it always can be, because we all know in this business that there's a lot of gray area, but try to be, you know, that should be number one. And number two, just, I don't want to say calm down, but be appropriate to the moment. And even in sports, there are some crazy great moments in sports. And if you sometimes don't scream them out, you upset some people. Again, you know, it was, to me, the Philadelphia Super Bowl we did a couple of years ago where the Eagles won, and I didn't call it routinely at the end of the game, but I didn't give it the same call that Merrill Reese would have given it in Philadelphia, who's their local announcer, because it's a different, you're talking to a different audience. So everything needs to be kept in perspective. Just stay calm, stay thoughtful, and sometimes it's just good to take a breath for a half a second before you blurt out what you want to say.
Talking perspective with Al Michaels. So what do you think about the Niners in the Super Bowl then?
Well, don't forget, the one 49er Super Bowl I did do, Mr. Steve Young had a pretty good day.
Not bad.
Yes, only it was six. They limited him. San Diego did to 6 touchdowns. And they even covered an 18-point spread, which was amazing, winning 49-26. So, yeah, I mean, I watched the game at the Cleveland game, obviously, and they looked great. The defense looked great. Things seem to be really coming together. I mean, Matt Breida looks like he's a stud running back. I didn't know too much about him, not having watched him for a while. And this will be very interesting because, you know, you got three really good teams in one division. So hopefully down the line, I would hope that, you know, we don't have San Francisco on the Sunday night schedule, but, you know, we always have that flexible schedule thing. So I haven't really looked down the line that far, but, you know, it could be that we have a game in late November or December that's not that attractive, and we can roll the Niners in there.
Are you less happy that the 49ers aren't on the Sunday night schedule, or pleased the Dolphins are not?
Well, there are a few other teams, too, that I'm pretty happy are not on the schedule. But, you know, fortunately, with this flexible thing, Ray, as you know, it wasn't like the old years on Monday Night Football when we would occasionally do a game at the end of the season with two teams were like 3-11. We actually did one of those games, the Giants in Houston in whatever year it was in the 90s. And, you know, you couldn't get out of it, and the ratings are going to tank. And those are hard games to do. I mean, what are you going to tell the audience, you know? I remember, I think a couple of years ago, we had a Thanksgiving game, Giants and Washington. And we can't change the Thanksgiving game. That's already locked in. And neither team, I mean, the Giants were 5-8, whatever, something like that. The Redskins were 4-whatever. And I remember coming on the air and saying, you know, folks, I can only paraphrase the old Denny Green line. These teams are not who we thought they were.
Al, on a day where we're, you know, going through the old memory book, there is no one better to talk with than you about Loma Prieta 30 years ago. Thank you so much for your time today. It meant an awful lot to us and to the audience. Thank you. Even Ray Ratto enjoyed it. That's saying something.
And that's he's a tough audience, let me tell you.
Will you guys flex Dolphins Jets for me?
You know, know, we're trying very hard. I don't think the league's going to let us get there, though, because, you know, that's the number of, you know, six regional on CBS, and they may throw their bodies over it.
Well, if you guys don't care, then I don't know why you're bothering anymore.
Be good, guys. Enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.